All right, everybody. Episode number 103. Let's get into this. Episode 103 is brought to you by Away. Away makes first-class luggage at coach prices that allow you to charge your phone on the go. That's what I'm talking about. For $20 off of suitcases, go to awaytravel.com/clearedhot and use the promo code CLEAREDHOT. And I will say that again at the end, and I'll actually spell that out. But if you're curious about what these are, they are affordable, high-quality suitcases that can charge your phone. They cut out the middleman, and because of that, Away is able to offer the perfect luggage made with high-quality materials at a much lower price. It comes in a variety of colors and four sizes: the carry-on, the bigger carry-on, the medium, and the large. Away has designed the perfect suitcase to make your travel experience as stress-free as possible. The carry-on bags feature two USB ports and a high-capacity battery to allow you to charge multiple devices on the go: phones, tablets, laptops, etc. So you never have to worry about a dead phone or fight for an outlet in the airport. They're ultra durable, yet they're lightweight. They're made with premium impact-resistant German polycarbonate. They ride smooth in any direction. They have four 360-degree spinner wheels that won't get stuck on cracks, corners, carpet, and they're not going to break. They are theft-proof. They have a TSA-approved combination lock built in to keep your belongings safe. And even an overpacker, and you know who you are out there. I'm probably an underpacker, but there are people out there who are an overpacker. They can fit everything in there that you need. Patent-pending interior compression system that tightly buckles in your bulky items. It comes with a lifetime warranty, so if anything breaks, Away will fix or replace it for life. Carry-on sizes are compliant with all major U.S. airlines, while still maximizing the amount you can pack. And there's free shipping within the contiguous United States, Europe, and Australia. With that, if you decide to go down this path, you're going to get a risk-free 100-day trial period. If at any point you decide it's not for you, you can return it for a full refund. No questions are going to be asked. Think about this, or this is how I think about it. I have far too many electronic devices. I will get anxiety when their battery gets low because, God forbid, I don't have connectivity at all times, which is probably exactly what I need. But I love these things because they charge your cell phone and they're bomb-proof material. Like I said, I'm probably a minimalist packer. But even if I was an overpacker, that interior design, it definitely helps keep things neat. They're super light. You can pick them up and carry them up the stairs, which is what you should do. Don't take the escalator. Carry them up the stairs. They're an awesome piece of luggage. And again, the offer that I mentioned in the front, just for the listeners of this show, for $20 off of your suitcase, go to Away Travel. That's one world. You could travel the world with these. AwayTravel.com/clearedhot. And use the promo code CLEAREDHOT at checkout. The way I'm looking at it, it is all uppercase. So just do yourself a favor and put it in there. All uppercase. That's $20 off a suitcase by going to awaytravel.com/clearedhot. Promo code cleared hot. Now, for the episode today, this is an episode that I want to do, this type of episode is an episode that I want to do more of. My guest is Andrew Fontes, and he is the man running Gators Eyewear. There's a lot of people running Gators Eyewear, but Andrew's awesome. He's at the top. I've been working directly with him for quite a few years now. And the reason I say I want to do more episodes like this is I look at this episode as a snapshot into a company that I have worked with for a long time. And there's a reason that I work with them. I'm actually pretty exclusive when it comes to the brands that I will enter into a relationship with. I was not that way when I first went down the professional skydiving and base jumping path. I was pretty much in a place where I needed to take any offer, and I suspect a lot of people at the beginning are like that as well. And I found myself doing things that were a little bit artificial in my life to try to capture content, and I stripped all of that away, and I'm at a point in my life now where if it naturally occurs or exists in my life, and the brand is awesome and they have a good story and good people behind it, then I'm willing to enter into a relationship with them, and I do the best I can to try to provide them value for the service that they're paying me for. I have been wearing Gator sunglasses since probably late 2002, early 2003. And it's an interesting brand because it has a very deep tie to the SEAL community. And they sell to a lot of military members. And they're able to do that because of the fact that they're manufactured, designed and manufactured here in the U.S. And there are challenges and price points that come with that that I think are interesting. But I want to kind of dive a little bit deeper into this brand with Andrew, let him explain the story, where they're going, who they are. And I want to do that with the other brands that I work with as well. So think of this as a little bit of a microscope into an organization that I love. And probably for 12, 14, 15 years, I was a pure retail customer of, and I'm super proud to be one of their ambassadors. So here we go. Episode 103. With the man kicking ass at Gator's Eyewear, Andrew Fontes. Enjoy.
Okay, got the red smoke.
Gun run, north and south, west of the smoke, west of the smoke.
Okay, copy, west of the smoke. I'm looking at danger close now.
Oh, wait a minute, give it to me, I need it. You're clear hot.
Copy, cleared hot.
Why?
I don't know.
Why doesn't Gators have a podcast?
It's a good question.
The barriers to entry are low. People ask me about it. It's about probably $500 if you want to get, well, depending on when you want to, or how you want to get into it, the cost isn't that bad, but you have to have a recording device, a way to pick up the audio, and somewhere to host it on the internet.
Right.
Which I went to YouTube and figured out how to do all of that. My mom, I think my fourth iteration of gear right now, it's pretty good. It's not that I know any people who have successful podcasts that I could ask, like, hey, how do you do this?
Yeah, not at all.
Instead, right. It's like, I'm going to figure it out on my own because I'm not going to ask for help. Yeah. It's good, though. I love the medium. It has a reach farther than I ever thought that it would ever be. I get emails from people all over the world, which is just humbling in one way and then terrifying in another.
Right. Well, originally, didn't you start it as just kind of like a hobby, just doing your thing?
I started it because Joe said, hey, you should start a podcast. And I said to myself, well, you're moderately successful in that space.
A little bit.
And I'm not the smartest person in the world, but I know some smart people and some successful people. And what I try to do is take their advice. I said, okay. I had no idea which direction it was going to take. I had one guest lined up, which was Ron Ortiz.
Yeah.
For the first podcast. And then from there, I was like, well, what do we do now?
When was that?
Over 2 years ago. So this will probably be episode 103 or 104, but I just launched 100. I try to release on Mondays. I've missed a few weeks here or there, but, you know, 52 weeks per year. But like I said, I've missed. So probably just over 2 years.
Right on.
I still remember that one. That was a good one.
Ron Ortiz?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've had a conversation with him since then, but he is, talk about a Gators fan and fiction auto.
Solid dude.
Solid dude. It disgusts me how good of shape he's in, actually. And I think he's in his 50s. I'm going to say he's in his 50s.
Yeah.
And he's in better shape I've ever been in my entire life. It really frustrates me.
He's kind of a freak.
Yeah. He is a freak. We should let you guys introduce yourselves because that's generally the best way.
Yeah.
And if you'll notice, I say this every time that if you wanted me to mess up your intro or say things that weren't true, I would start with the intro. So it's best if you guys just do it yourselves.
All right.
Well, my name is Andrew Fontes. I am the brand manager for Gator's Eyewear, which is a American-made sunglass company. We'll get a little bit more into that talking with Andy's relation with us.
And I'm Jared Manzaranis, and I do the graphics mainly and the photography, a little bit of videos, a little bit of everything.
But before we talk about any of that, I'm curious as to why you decided to drive your rental car off of the driveway and onto... So I guess I have to lay it out for people because we're not going to take a picture of the yard, but I do live a good distance out of town, but it's not like it's horse and wagon trail. You're not breaking brush. There is a driveway. There are street signs. And also it's currently snowing. I went to bed last night and there wasn't a lick of snow. We're looking out the window right now. And normally it would be like a good view of the forest. There's the view of the lake out there. None of the snow was out there. I woke up this morning. There's at least 3 inches out there right now.
Mm-hmm.
But with that comes tire tracks, you know, and I had just gotten back from being in town, so I'm sitting here doing the social post for the podcast I released today. And out of the corner of my eye, I saw movement, and I was thinking, yes, it's going to be a turkey, and I'm going to go get it. And I look over, and it's just a rental car.
Cruising up
what is nowhere near any tire tracks or a driveway. It's basically just my front yard. So I would love to hear how you found yourself there, Andrew.
It's funny, you know.
Oh, it's funny.
Been in Southern California my whole life, not used to driving in these kinds of conditions. The snow is somewhat limiting down there, but we got to a point where there were we couldn't really see the tire tracks, and it was really, really wide out conditions. And I see this right turn or a straight turn, and right turn looks a little bit sharp and it doesn't look like it goes anywhere. And then the straight kind of stops looking like pavement and more like ground and plants and things covered by snow. And then started getting a little rough, and oh, we're not on the driveway.
We're not even close.
Did you get to the point where the tires just were spinning? Is that why you guys stopped there?
Yeah, and I'm like, oh, we're just going to throw up the e-brake here, and we'll call it a day right now. And then you get out on the porch, and like, dude, this is epic, taking photos of it.
Yeah, I could care less because it's just grass anyway, but I'm so happy that I saw that and was able to photo document it, and we'll, of course, post it with the social post for this podcast because it is blatantly obvious that you were not on the driveway, nor were the conditions wide out. No. I love that your description that they were. Oh, it was a blizzard. I couldn't see anything. I could see you.
Oh, man. Yeah, there's a good amount of visibility. I was focused on doing a time lapse, too. So I was sitting there on the dash trying to see that. And then next thing I know, I'm like watching the GoPro, and it's like, oh, dude, we're not even close to the driveway. I think it's over there.
Whoops.
Yeah, it happens. But like I said,
it was good.
There's nothing you could have damaged.
No.
I'm amazed you made it as far up there as you did. Were you guys in two-wheel or four?
I think that's on all-wheel drive vehicle.
Yeah.
Which is pretty smart for a Montana rental car.
Right.
They actually dialed you guys in.
Right. Well, I even asked them at the rental car place, are you guys expecting a lot of snow, and do you guys have anything that's all-wheel? I'm like, oh, we're just going to get a little bit tomorrow. A little bit. Nothing to worry about, but we'll get you an all-wheel anyway. And then if this is a little bit.
There's been a couple hours today, earlier this morning, where it was dumping to the point. I was looking at the weather. I don't know if this will actually stick. I think this is a little bit premature for the full on like ski season.
Right.
But the temperatures are low enough that it might stick, but I think it hits the 40s next week. So this will probably clear. And then the next time, probably the next time that it goes like this, it'll stick. But I guarantee you the mountains are probably getting 6, 7, 8 inches, which is nice. 'Cause it will stay up there.
That's crazy.
Which is all that matters.
And you have a mountain right here.
We have two.
So is it Blacktail?
So you drove by Blacktail, which is in Lakeside.
Okay.
Which is, I would describe as maybe just a few miles south of the north end of Flathead Lake. And then Whitefish. Are you guys staying in Kalispell or Whitefish?
Kalispell.
So north of Kalispell by about 10 miles is Whitefish. On the north end of Whitefish is, I mix this one up sometime with Bozeman. It's Big Mountain. Bozeman is Big Sky, but Big Mountain is in Whitefish. And it's phenomenal. I mean, it's that if you guys are, do you guys do winter sports at all?
Yeah, I grew up snowboarding, but it's been a little bit now that I live down in San Diego. So
you don't get the board out much in San Diego?
Yeah, no. Maybe for the dunes or something.
Yeah, but if you guys are interested in snow sports, Blacktail, from my understanding, is more of a family owned, whereas Big Mountain is, I don't know if it's corporately owned, but it's the infrastructure there. They have the full hotel and shops and restaurant experience and all that stuff. Blacktail has a lodge, and it's cool though too. Like I've gone up there and taken my boys, and we've had some good days up there. It's just different,
right?
But less packed most days than Big Mountain.
Yeah,
nice.
So, history of Gators,
in a nutshell, is we started in 1989 with just the concept of making sunglasses. You know, and originally
who started it?
There's a guy by the name of Ken Wilson, who's no longer involved with the company, has had his hands along with the progress of the brand for quite some time, but parted ways with us a few years back.
He just woke up one day and was like, you know what? Sunglasses.
Well, he's kind of the textbook definition of an entrepreneur, right? Just had this drive to do something and made plastic sunglasses for many years. Ended up getting some legal battles with other eyewear companies and decided one day to do something different, which was kind of pioneering this, let me make a sunglass frame out of aluminum instead of doing traditional plastic injection molding.
Yep.
And he was a big avid motorcycle guy, so he wanted something that was going to match the aesthetics of his motorcycle, but also be extremely functional, right? Wrapping underneath his helmet, you don't have a lot of real estate under there, so when you're riding, you have something close to your face. A few years after that, the skydive community adopted the product because it's something you could form to your face, jump out of an airplane. Things aren't flying off your face at all. And you know, you, as you know, as an avid jumper, you need something that's going to stay put.
Full disclosure, I've had at least a half a dozen pair of gators fly off my face.
Sweet.
Completely my fault, though. Like I said, I've turned the lights on at that organization for probably at least 1 month.
Nice.
Because for a decade before having a relationship with you guys at all,
right,
I was just a retail customer running the cash register.
That's it. Coming in. Here he comes. Well, you know, with skydiving, you have a lot of these civilian guys that get contracted with the military, yep, right? Specifically, you know, your
like down in TAC Air in San Diego, yep, all those guys. Yep.
Exactly. So, lo and behold, you start working with the SEAL team community. One guy wears it, two of his buddies start wearing it, and this is just a natural, organic, you know, I don't want to say implosion, but natural, organic, you know, passing of the brand through that special warfare community really helped us garner some attention by these guys. And so it was, gosh, I want to say maybe 11 or 12 years ago that I was, I remember walking into the building. There was a guy up front looking at some glasses and nobody was there. It was at lunchtime. So I just started naturally talking to him. And I was asking what he does, and he said, "I'm on the teams." And at the time, it didn't really, you know, register the teams.
Like, thinking volleyball, soccer.
Like, what sport do you play? He's like, no, you numbskull. I'm on the SEAL teams, and this light bulb just kind of clicked in my head.
Yeah. Well, first off, he's a douchebag for describing him like that. So, full disclosure.
Right. Yeah. Well, and then so when I found that out, I was like, "This is a really good market that we can start working with." So started to meet. Individual by individual, and started work with them on more of an intimate level. Like, what are you looking for out of a sunglass? Is it a sunglass? Is it a piece of equipment that you're using for, you know, an austere condition? You know, what is it that you're looking for? And we've been working with that community very intimately for a very long time. You know, developing lens concepts and developing frame concepts that are going to make them better at what they do.
You know,
work with them. And it's funny, everybody that you ask, you know, we get a lot of the corporate guys will say, "Why do these guys wear the product?" It's like, there's a number of reasons, but the number one is they got to look good. You know, you ask anybody whether they're wearing Magnums, "Oh, I don't look like a tool when I'm wearing them. You know, I look good," and that's the number one rule. And
you're talking about guys from like the SEAL community? Okay, at least I'm not, because they're being honest, because like the rules kind of in order, you know, is like, if you don't know what you're doing, act as if. Mm-hmm. And regardless of what you're doing, you need to look good.
Gotta look good, number one.
I've sent people back, like they were coming out and they had like all tan but like a green pouch on them. I'm like, "That's unacceptable. You're not gonna clash like that. You need to go change that, or you're not getting on the helicopter." Like, and they thought I was joking. I'm like, "No, you're gonna look good."
Right.
And green and tan, it clashes. So you need to square your shit away.
Making us all look bad.
Yeah. No, you have to look good. When it, regardless of what you're doing, if you're going to fail, you better fail looking so goddamn good.
Yeah. So that was the number one rule. And then, you know, all these other things, you know, the adjustability was a big part of it. Everybody's got a different sized face and head shape. So, you know, having one pair of glasses that anybody can virtually form to fit their face the right way. The wrap contour is going to work real well under your ear pro, under, you know, even under, just say when you're dropping nods, if you're wearing clear lenses, you know, it gives you that eye protection without being too intrusive or obstructive, you know, having too much, you know, real estate up there.
So I can describe that, because I battled with that for a long time for people who may not understand. You get your helmet on, you have your night vision goggles on, eye protection. You know, there's, most of what we do is training related, but the three things in training: threat to life, limb, or eyesight. Those are the key issues that are always, like, those are a catastrophic emergency that you're always going to handle. So you're always looking for ways to protect life, limb, or eyesight. And eyesight's a bitch, because you will train at nighttime. You have your helmet on, you have your night vision goggles on. And a lot of the times we're doing like sim round type stuff. And if you put, it used to be like the Oakley blades, like the clear Oakley blades, and you'd get them. And when you swing your nods down, a lot of the times it's pressing the glass, the nod. A lot of people think you're looking through the night vision goggle too, which you're not. You're actually looking at a screen. So it's not, you know, it's a projection, but you want it to get close to your face so you can see it. But if you put that eye pro in between, you're like running along and you're wearing a lot of gear and you're sweating, and actually like, "I can't see very well." Well, it's because your eye pro is fogging. And so what happens is the guys take the eye pro off. Mm-hmm. And then if you start getting around vehicles or muzzle blast or helicopter rotor wash, and you know, taking it directly in the eye, or as has happened to a few people, taking a sim round near the eye or into the eye can be catastrophic. So it's a pain in the ass, and it was something that I struggled with. I actually got to the point where I wouldn't wear eye pro because I could not see through my nods, and I just hoped that in the training environments. I always tried to shoot like knee and below because there's really no point in shooting your buddy in the face anyway with the sim round. Not everybody plays by those rules, but I would just hope that the night vision goggle would stop it, because otherwise I was running around. I would see a green blob, an obscure green blob that I couldn't navigate my way through. So it's a challenge for sure. I understand why guys, they go that path for sure.
Right. And it's the little things on the the sunglass frame itself, you know, where our nose piece is also adjustable. And, you know, people that get used to wearing it live by it. But what it also does is it creates a little bit of ventilation. And that's the number one thing to combat fogging or to, you know, combat the fog factor from happening. We put an anti-fog coating on the back of the lens to stop
that. Does it really work?
It does. It deteriorates over time. But if you're like me and some other individuals, you know, they sweat a lot, they'll fog up pretty quick. But that ventilation really does make the world a difference, especially on a clear lens when you're, you know, inside of a structure doing anything where you're perspiring. And then the other small things about the frame, you know, anybody who's into, you know, engineering, we use a very specific grade of aluminum. It's a 7075 T6, which in layman's term is aircraft grade. So extremely durable, very difficult to work with. And we've pioneered a way to manufacture this product in-house, vertically integrated. Everything's done here in the States. But it gives you this product that is lightweight, extremely durable, adjustable, and, you know, it also comes with a lifetime warranty. And we stand behind our products. And then one of the other fun things with the glasses is when you look at the hinges, the way we make the hinges work is that they're riveted down as opposed to a tap and thread where you're going to screw a hinge into a temple piece or a center frame. These things are riveted down and we use two sets of hinges instead of one. People ask why. It's just extra durability. You know, you can't have these things failing on you. You can't have your hinges, you know, break it on you. So when you got two, it's a lot more durable.
You know, we were talking before we started and I was thinking about this. When we originally started talking about having you guys come out for a podcast, and I still owe Heather a quote for why I choose to use gaiters. But like I was telling you, I started jumping with them and it had to have been at the earliest, it was late 2002. And at the latest, it was early 2003. And I found them kind of the same way. The guy who's probably taught me the most about jumping was and always has been a gearhead. So he's like a cross country dude. And the image that always sticks in my mind, it was the chrome on chrome. And I'm pretty sure they were probably a set of radiators. And then for people listening, this may not make sense, but I'll put up the link to the website and you can go to town. I describe radiators as the women's version of gator sunglasses because the magnums fit better on my face. So I have to mock those that wear something that I don't wear.
Right, right.
And put them down generally. Guys like Jack Carr wear radiators. It's not a big deal. Like to point out a name of somebody who is shorter than me by 1 inch and not tough enough to make it through my buds class. But I was before that. It was like I had lost so many pair of like, I would think I was rolling plastic Oakleys at the time. And I saw the sunglasses and I remember like the first website, it was dog shit.
I wasn't in that.
No, none of you guys were. And I was in Arizona. We do these large chunks in Arizona, but then I got them the first time. I think they were actually radiators, the first ones, because I don't think magnums were out in the early 2000s. And started jumping with them. It's like, holy cow, unbelievable. First time I put them on, a little bit of air was coming in, so I'm molding them to my face. And from then on out, it was good to go. But I have had a few. I jump with them with croquis.
Right.
Because I can cinch them even tighter to my face. And I've had a few times where I did, and I dove out, mostly on like C-130s where they're just hauling the mail. Mm-hmm. And the last thing you see is just wee, and you're like, oh.
Flying off.
Going back to the website. Yeah. But yeah, but people, and you know, I was thinking about when Heather was asking me for the quote and why in 17 years I've stayed literally with this. I mean, I wear them every single day, except for at night. But they're bomb-proof. And I, for a while, I thought they were indestructible. But I happened to have a buddy who tested the durability of that and literally broke them while they were on my face.
Really?
That's how hard he backhanded me.
He
hit me.
Nice.
I didn't do anything to him. I definitely didn't choke him with his own seatbelt.
Oh, yeah.
Right before that.
Sure not. Sure not.
Yeah, in the back of a car where we had had a few beers. We weren't driving. We had had a few beers. We had decided we were going to kumite in the back of the car. And he came across so hard that I've been hit with those things. I've been kicked wearing those. I've smashed my head and it was completely bent. He actually has them. I will send them to you or send you a picture.
Yeah, let's see it.
But they are some of the most bomb-proof pair of equipment that I've ever worked with, which is why again, we were talking about having you come up here. I think it makes total sense. It's the longest standing relationship. Actually, not, not the longest standing relationship, but of all the stuff that I have done that has transcended my career, I think it's the one piece of gear that I'm still using from what I used to use before.
Right.
17 years is a long stretch.
Yeah.
Good amount of time for sure.
It's a good amount of time. It's interesting to see him in the SEAL teams too. Let's just say I can point out a team guy from a good distance away. They have a general look about them sometimes, usually flip-flops, traditionally board shorts, baggy shirt, sometimes a baseball hat, a particular watch, and then a set of gaiters on.
Right.
And you're like, oh, I wonder what you do for a living.
Right.
Well, I'm a rodeo clown. I'm like, are you? Are you a rodeo clown? Tell me more about your rodeo clown lifestyle.
So funny. Yeah, you get that look, you know, where the team guys are coming into the office. Not every day, but quite often to, you know, especially pre-deployment or post-deployment, they're coming in to buy fresh sets of glasses to head downrange, or they're coming back with a bag of stuff that's just been beaten to shit and
yeah.
Need them all repaired.
Can you explain the Barry compliance? Because that's one thing I think is interesting, and I don't know if a lot of people know this about working with the military or for the purchasing. There are restrictions on what you can buy based on where things are created, which I think also speaks to, you know, a lot of people like, oh, well, you know, the price point is an issue, but right. There's something you get with the price point, and there's a reason for it too.
Right.
And I actually don't know a whole lot about the Barry system other than what it is, and we used to have to navigate it.
Right. You know, Barry compliance, I'm not, you know, a professional, and other than knowing that it is dealing in regards to textiles and specifically anything that the government is procuring through a specific method or means, the products have to meet Barry compliance, meaning that every bit of textile have to be made in America. And so for us, the only textile we have in a completed sunglass box is the actual microfiber pouch. So we have those made in America specifically for military orders. The rest of the product is done 100% in the States, you know, manufactured from womb to tomb, you know, out of, from everything from the sheet aluminum to the hardware components to everything is done, in Yuma, Arizona. So we navigate that real well. We don't have to have a specific line made in America and then ship the rest down seas to save money. We just do the whole program, here in the States.
Safe to say there'd be a difference in price point if you guys chose to outsource?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, it's funny. We get products sent to us from time to time from manufacturers, overseas. And first thing you pick them up, they may aesthetically look the same, but you start trying to do the adjustments. You start doing a little, you know, start kind of picking apart the components and you figure that's just cheaply made. And so, you know, we're able to circumvent that again. We have really, really, really high quality standards as well. Our QC department's probably the biggest part of our operation just because we're so nitpicky on quality. So
what's the rating, the ballistic rating?
So the Z87. That's a lot of guys had the impression that we passed that. And for the impact side of it, we always have passed that criteria.
Yeah.
There's another side of it, which is optics. And the optics side is subjective, first off, which is, you know, you and I will look at this test. You may see X amount of lines resolution. I may see a different just because the way our eyes are reading it. So it's objective. That's the part that we were always marginal on. So we never stamped the product with that safety certification. Up until about 2 years ago, we modified our lens cut and made it fit within the Magnum and the Raptor. So now they have that full ballistic capability and capacity where we can stamp it saying, hey, this is good to go.
And I'll hear people say that. And I asked you that question for a reason, because I want to address a point with people. Just because your eyewear is ballistic doesn't mean you should test that, because it means you got shot in the face. You're like, oh man,
it's not a good test.
My glasses are ballistic. I'm like, okay, let's walk through a scenario. You get blasted in the face and your sunglasses survive. You still got blasted in the face. Let's not harp on that. However, it's probably great for frag and all that other good stuff. Absolutely wear it, but don't lead with that, please.
Right.
Because you got blasted in the face.
Right, right. Now, and it's funny because
that's not good.
Even before we started, you know, stamping the product, operators have been wearing it for many years before that. They're like, could care less about the rating, man. These things they've been through hell and back and are still in one piece.
The rating, I would suspect, especially when it comes to the military, is more a function of purchasing as opposed. Because if, say, the military wouldn't be able to directly buy it, I used to basically just take my own money. I mean, guys, you bounce up against that purchasing requirement or the sourcing requirement, or they just sometimes will say no, and all you see is guys reaching into their wallet just to get their own credit card. So they're going to wear it for the reasons that they want to, not the reasons the government tells them that they're not allowed to.
Right.
So I feel like that's the biggest thing, too, that people that wear them, you know, stand by them and will get more and more pairs of them just because of what they are and how well they're made.
Like I said, 17 years. I was a little bit blown away by that.
Right. And our best salespeople are our customers. The guys wearing the stuff are always telling their buddies about good gear.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's all about passing the word, right? So,
you know, most of the time people will ask me, because I'm wearing them and I usually have a couple pair in my truck, and they're like, oh, where'd you get those? Those things are awesome. And they'll try them on and they'll love them. I might just keep them. you know, and just like I've handed pairs out after pair out, and next, you know, you see them like 2 months later, they're still wearing them. I'm like, those are awesome, aren't they? They're like, oh my God.
Yeah, that's right? Great.
Yeah. Like yeah. I said, 17 years. Yeah. How'd you guys get associated with the brand? Because you obviously came in.
Yeah. So
how many years ago was it now?
2008, roughly.
Okay.
Yeah. So funny, I got out of college and I started working for another company in the action sports industry, predominantly in motocross. And
oh, that's right. You are a motocross guy, aren't you?
Well, it was.
Yeah.
And in 2008, that company had acquired Gators. And I remember sitting in the conference room hearing as sales reps, we're going to be able to start repping this new sunglass line that they're acquiring. What's it called? Oh, Gators. What? Oh, just Gators. And then they start showing us the models. You're like, oh man, this is like, it's not my deal. You know, it's not my jam. You know, it looks like no offense to the communities that were wearing at the time, but it just didn't seem to fit action sports. It was more of, you know, the NASCARs, more of the garage type, you know, guys that are, you know, wrenching on cars and things like that. That was totally their look and feel, but not quite action sports.
What is, what falls into the category of action sports?
So at the time, in my definition was, motocross, surf, skate, snow, you know, all those kind of had fallen into that,
okay.
the moto, I guess the moto heads were really kind of our, you know, section of action sports. That's the one we appealed to the most of that the previous company was at. And then again, meeting that one guy who said he was on the teams, even though I was never in the military, I've always had a passion for it. A lot of family that's in the military. So figured if these guys are wearing it, there's some play here. And then ever since then, I've been really, really addicted to it and been working with them in that capacity. So just over 11 years now. So,
well, you, Jared, how'd you get involved?
I got out of college actually. And
where'd you go to college?
Cal Poly up in San Luis Obispo.
Yep.
So went there, and then my buddy actually was working for our sister company, Liquid Eyewear, which is also a hingeless glasses, aluminum as well. So I went from
those are the ones working, that don't bend.
Correct.
Yeah.
So I was working for that company and along with a couple other companies that we have, and then came in. Andrew was like, hey, this guy knows what he's doing, kind of. Come on over and let's see what you can do with Gators. And so for the last about year and a half, I've been in the graphics and photos and videos and whatnot. It's been a good time.
Yeah. What do you guys find to be the most successful way to spread the word?
You know, it's funny. That's a challenge that we face every day, because you got, you know, the corporate side of the business that wants to see growth. And, you know, we've been growing like crazy over the past, gosh, 5 years that we've been under. You get the company's changed hands a few times as well. And, you know, when we took it over 2014, we've seen this just aggressive growth year over year. It's really telling that story. Well, it's really...
The Great Blizzard of 2019 is basically happening outside of the window right now. That's still not white out though, conditions, okay. Just so you know. Which also, that is worse than the conditions that you were driving in. So we'll just keep it all in perspective.
I got it on video, so it's...
Yeah.
Okay, that's good stuff. No, but it's really, you know, telling the story of Gators through the guys using it. Not trying to isolate one, you know, even though we talk about the SEAL teams, not trying to isolate one user group over another, but having them really tell the stories, the testimonials of guys that have, you know, been downrange and done, you know, really crazy things, come back and say, hey, look, I've been wearing this product because I believe in it.
Yeah.
You know, it makes a difference. It can make a difference between life and death. You know, that may be a little bit dramatic, but I've heard a lot of stories about, hey, these things saved my eyes from, you know, shell casing going on. I mean, there's a number of scenarios where we'll get glasses sent in with, you know, frag pieces in them still. And it's like
life, limb, or eyesight, man. I'm telling you, when we're given safety briefs at all the evolutions, those are the three things that you're looking for. Like, right. if there's a threat or risk to those, it is taken very, very seriously.
Right.
It's tough to capture the testimonials from guys who are active duty still.
Right. Right.
Given their limitation to speak about it.
Right. And if anything, it inside our little tribe, because Gators is actually a relatively small company at the end of the day. We're very skeleton crew in it. Everybody's wearing multiple hats, but it gives that passion that people have for what they do. You know, you have these guys coming in who, you know, you can't disclose what they do, and you know, just for what you just said.
They can.
Yeah. But to have them,
there's no James Bond out there. The stuff they're doing is not that cool.
But to have them really play your product up, it gives you a sense of pride in doing what you do. It's not you're just coming to work to push paper. You're actually doing something that makes a difference for people, and it's a pretty cool thing to do. And then we, you know, we delved into the functional fitness space with our association sponsorship of CrossFit, which is actually
I'm familiar. Yeah, tell me about that. I'm curious. Is it still ongoing?
No. So our official sponsorship ended in 2017. think it was 16, 17 we did it, but we still take an active role in going to the games, trying to go to as many regionals as possible, just because we, you know, when we sponsor the games itself, you have this kind of melting pot of different people, you know, your guys that are in the military, law enforcement, you know, first responders. These guys are all training functional fitness, and it just seemed to be this applicable, appropriate setting for us to get in front of these people. And that 2016 games, the last one at Carson, was, I don't think any brand has had that kind of an activation. And you were a huge
part of that. It was crazy. Well, I think that's how our professional relationship actually began. It was the year before that. Up until then, I think it was... I was still just a retail customer.
Yeah. No, it's funny because I was thinking about that on the drive up here. I'm like, how did I meet Andy? And I remember we were sitting in a conference room with Dave Castro and Steve Weiss, me and Joseph were in having a conversation, and okay, we're going to do this. We're going to sponsor this event. You know, we're going to do this. Right. And at the time it was three of us at the company. So, or three or four of us. And we didn't have capacity to take that on. So we asked Steve and Dave, you know, anybody you can recommend coming on as a consultant? They both literally look at each other like, Andy. It's like, okay. So we get your information, and Joseph does his homework and sends me all these YouTube clips on, hey, this is Andy Stump.
Oh, God.
Very, very precisely, the one that I watched first was you training
don't say the waterfall team. God damn it.
I think everybody's seen that one.
Oh, man. And I'm like, holy shit, what are we getting ourselves into with this guy? I mean, this is a gnarly, gnarly butt.
That video has millions of views. And what people
it cracks me up.
What people don't understand is that I was legitimately pissed because I got called about a half an hour before that.
Right.
And they said, hey, because I was living in base housing. I was in E6 at the time. And they're like, we need you to come. It was like a Saturday. Mm-hmm. Like, there's an evolution at Buds. We need you to come down here. I'm like, I don't want to. Cool, we'll see you in 20 minutes. It's like, threw my stuff on, threw my hoodie on, like got there. And it was like, I was talking to the coaches on the way there. My dad was there because my dad was visiting. I'm like, Dad, get in the car. I'm like, father, son time. Let's go. Let's go. And met the coaches. Hadn't met the players at all. And as we're walking to the conference room where that video opens and I'm talking to them about how I'm going to hurt them, which in my heart of hearts, I'm like, I'm going to fucking hurt you.
And it's great too, because they're all blonde hair, little Orange beach County kids that are just like, oh,
I
this
really
is great. This
I don't think they were taking me serious.
Right.
Because I did everything. I laid out what I was going to do to them, and then I did everything that I laid out. Basically, they knew what was coming. But yeah, that video, I didn't realize it. I saw it the other day. Somebody, I'll get it forwarded to me about two or three times a month.
Right.
People are like, is this you? I was like, unfortunately. And I would have obviously said different things if I'd have had more time or if I knew it was going to get that reach. But yeah, the fact that you guys saw that first, like, son of a bitch.
There's a lot in that actual, you know, video that you can take away from, but your testimonial essentially about, you know, what it's like to be on a team.
Yep.
That was what got me, you know, I think that's what gets everybody kind of jacked up. Like, dude, this guy's a badass and he went through all this stuff and
not a badass. Oh. We can put that out there. Believe me. I worked around a lot of badasses, and I say this every time. I will give myself a C across the board for ability and career, and I actually leave it up to my peers. They can, you know, I mean, the actual grade you get for your peer and ability is from your peers.
Right. That's true. But after seeing that and then watching, hey, listen, first guy's going to quit, and then after that, 20 minutes after that, then 20 minutes after that, and you guys will all be done by lunchtime. And it's like, oh, man. And then, you know, watched a bunch of the clips. You know, you did some stuff with Killcliff. You know, always going back to your roots of, you know, what you've done in the SEAL teams, and, you know, how your military career kind of, you know, I don't want to say ended, but how you kind of got out of the military.
It ended, you know. That's an accurate way to describe it.
But, you know, the whole time is this guy's been a customer of ours since before we had a professional relationship.
Yeah.
You know, you were, like you said, you kept the lights on for us for a couple of days. So,
like I said, I've lost a few jumping. I've lost them in backpacks. I've misplaced them in rental cars. I get to the point where I'm like, I'll just hit the plus button until there's five and just
send them on out.
But no, and it was also thinking about different things to talk about on the podcast was kind of your overall testimony, which you've talked about so far, but it's just, that's the best thing that's the best story we can tell is the story that you're telling, you know, the guys that are actually wearing them. It's not us trying to pitch it as, oh, hey, this guy wears it because of this. It's not having Andy.
I literally can pull up pictures from the early 2000s where I'm wearing one version over another. And I just have to imagine, given the price point, and then also I look at myself and my unwillingness to buy new things on the internet that I haven't physically had my hands on. And it's tough. Like I tell people, like, and I say the same thing. I'm like, oh, it's machine grain aluminum. I don't know what that means, but I've heard Andrew say it. So I tell people.
Sounds good.
And I tell them that they're malleable, and I'll take a pair and I start bending. They're like, oh no. And I'm like, no, it's fine. Like your face is a little bit wider than mine, or I'll bend them. And that's gotta be tough. But yeah, like I said, I literally just walk around. I'm like, here you go. Here's like, try them. The CrossFit games though, man, I remember that activation with the individual colorways. And I mean, there were some pictures where it was just a sea.
Right.
Of glasses. Right. It was awesome.
Yeah, and you know, just remember, hey, I got this crazy idea. So why don't we do this color for the judges, this color for the medical staff, this color for the volunteers, this color for the athletes, this color for Dave Castro, this color for Dave Castro, this color. And it's like, you hey, make Dave Castro like 20 custom colors. This yes. would be great, man.
He will wear them.
And, you know, that's exactly how it went. You know, yeah. you had everything going. And, of course, the one time of the year, I guess that time of the summer is the hottest time. And it could be cold like this all week long. But the second the CrossFit Games hits Carson, California, it's like, you know, it's in the hundreds. Everybody's sweating.
And there's like a magnifying glass on that tennis stadium floor, which, of course, I'm pretty sure was black, wasn't it?
Right, right.
Did they put black matting out?
Yep.
Yeah, I think. Were people getting blisters on their hands that year?
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, they were doing some type of handstand or push-up, and people were literally... I mean, like the skin wasn't falling off, but
serious blisters.
There was residual from the heat.
Yeah, that's crazy. But again, there's not a single photo you look at from the time that the games had, like, unless it was at night, of course, but everybody's wearing the product. And, you know, after that, we saw this huge spike as a result of the activation, equity, you know, awareness, all these things just started going up. And it's been a great relationship. Obviously, the ecosystem of that whole activation has changed as well. So, you know,
the whole ecosystem itself has changed. I mean, people ask me, so I worked for CrossFit headquarters for 8 years, and people ask me about it. And I don't know how to answer because I'm not paying too much attention to it, but there are certainly some very large changes, specifically in the games world, it seems, from the structure of it. I can imagine from a activation perspective from a brand that it would be extremely difficult. Now that things seem to be handed out individually to, you know, I know Rogue is doing something. I know there's, isn't there one in Dubai or Abu Dhabi, something like that?
Yeah.
Because you guys now would have to have a relationship with each and every one of those.
Right.
Oh, right. Man.
Yeah. And last year there was no Del Mar. This year there is.
Okay.
So that's good. That's our backyard. You get a lot of the military community going to it.
Oh, for sure.
A lot of sense for us to do that. And that was kind of a bummer to not have it last year, just because it's a fun couple days working on a weekend. But
Bridget, I think, was saying, I was texting with him the other day. He's like, I got a whole new body. I'm like, what are you talking about? You don't have a whole new body. You're not going to win, Josh. Second place is the glass ceiling for you. He is such a stud, though. I put him through Buds, and it's like I would do all the workouts with the students. I would get crushed all the time. But my theory was, if I'm going to ask them to do something, I'm going to do it with them. And I was deep into working for CrossFit headquarters at that time. Actually, not really that deep. I had kind of really just started, but I had really adapted that philosophy for myself, and had seen the difference that it had made for me. So, you know, when I went through, it was funny. They would get a 3-ring binder. It was just the PT binder. And like, flip the page, instructor get up there. Okay, 21 push-ups. You know, like, oh, and then like, 21 squat. And like, okay, this sucks. And we started doing like wall balls and squats and thrusters and burpees and like, you know, all this stuff. We got concept 2 rowers. The end of phase workout for second phase became Fight Gone Bad, which I also made the instructors do. They did not like me for that. And I also made the instructors work out with the students with me, like the beach stuff. We do a ton of stuff on the berm and like the pull-up bars and all that. And goddamn, Josh. I mean, I was in okay shape. I've never been in like great shape, and I've never been a great exerciser, but that little son of a bitch, and when I say little, that's exactly what I mean. He's 3'9" in high heels, was just a stud, even in Buds. Just like,
just keeps going.
Yeah, he was, I mean, obviously he dialed his training up, but I'll be interested to see what he does. I see him diversifying. I think it's really good. And it's to see just outside of just the competing in the exercise space. Because that's one thing I see too, even for myself and, you know, in the skydiving world and the base jumping world. And I have the ability to do less and less and less. And if you're tied just to that activity and your execution of that activity, you're really, really narrowly going down a path that, like the jumping world, my sport parachute is relatively small. And there's some consequences for doing a turn that is too low, or just maybe sometimes you can't make it back to the drop zone. So you got to land on a dirt path somewhere and there's rocks everywhere. And if you don't nail that and you can't jump for 6 months, but your income is tied to just jumping. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think this is good advice for anybody who's in that endorsement world. You should look at doing something other than just the activity. Find a way to make it live beyond that, because If you are making your living from an activity, I hope that you realize there's an egg timer on it, and it will end. Right. Oh, hopefully, for sure. Not drastically.
Right.
And same with wingsuiting. That's pretty.
Well, you know, early. The wingsuiting I just paired with skydiving and base jumping. That was just like an ancillary skill that you could add to that. Wingsuit skydiving, like that picture that Trevor took on the wall. I love that suit.
Oh, it's awesome.
Those black and white pictures are amazing. That I probably actually have my eyes closed. Because it feels like you're laying on an air mattress. That is not hard. We were probably at 10,000 feet right there, so we had minutes to go. You have a reserve parachute, and it's just me and Trevor flying around. We've jumped so many times that there's an inherent level of trust. He's not going to hit me. I'm not going to hit him. The base jumping world is much more, would be the best way to describe it. There is an increased risk, and you just have less time.
Right.
And again, I don't want to be reliant upon jumping off of cliffs. Like, okay, I have to do this to pay the mortgage. That to me is a bad headspace to be in.
Right.
Because I think it'll force you down a path to making decisions for reasons that should not be made.
Plenty of other avenues to go.
But only if you look for them.
Yeah.
Because I do know, and I'm sure we all do, people who get very myopic and they'll just go down that one particular path. And they get to a point at the end of that path where they're very concerned, and then they almost feel like in a panic state because they don't know what to do. So they have to take their first option. And at least in my experience in life, when I put myself in those positions, which I have, and you have to do everything just to make it all work, your life sucks.
Right.
In the end, it will suck because you're going to do things that you hate doing as opposed to things that you enjoy doing.
Right.
So,
right. You seem like you got it going on though. I mean, you're doing a lot of fun stuff these days.
I don't know if I have it going on. To be honest with you, I kind of feel like most days my life is a mess. I'm trying to figure out what I have been able to identify for me is what I don't want to do. Mm-hmm. I could not work in an office from 9 to 5. I think I might be able to if I was doing something that was creative or I was teaching or trying to pass knowledge on. I think I could do that if it was in that environment. But if I look at the recipe for me trying to find a revolver to brush my teeth with, it would look like go to work at IBM. Mm-hmm. And I don't know anything about working at IBM. I'm just using the cubicle setting as an example. I think I would last in that about 30 days, mm-hmm. and then I would just lose my
mind. Tough.
Yeah. But there were some benefits to moving here to Montana. That opened some things up, and it took a few things away. Like my ability to, I used to live right by Skydive San Diego.
Right.
And I'd meet you down there. It was 10 minutes from my house. I literally could grab a cup of coffee in my backyard, drink it, hear the Twin Otter take off, call them and say, hey, put me on the second load, and be there ready to go by the time the second load went up. So that's different here, but I like teaching, which is what I think that's what I consider public speaking to be, which is about what I do half of my year. I like the endorsement stuff because it enables me to do cool things outdoors. Mm-hmm. But I've also, before I moved up here, I wasn't hunting at all. And now I'm hunting a good amount.
Now, who got you into that, Dudley?
Yeah, Dudley did. I got a bow because I listened to Joe Rogan talking with Cameron Haynes.
He's also a savage.
3 hours about how awesome bow hunting is. And I knew Joe at that point. And I texted him. I was like, what's the deal with this, man? Like, you guys are talking a big game. Is it as cool as you think, as you guys are talking about? He's like, yeah, it's awesome. Get it. So I went and got a bow. And I never thought I would hunt with it. For whatever reason, it never crossed my mind. I just was like, oh, I'll just do archery in my backyard in Chula Vista. I had 20 yards. I did shoot my neighbor's yard a few times. I'm not going to say that didn't happen.
That's awesome.
Yes, there was holes in their fences. It's amazing how far through a piece of wood an arrow can go, and it's really hard to get out. So I'd end up snapping them and hoping they didn't see the small hole. But I don't live there anymore, and I didn't like the neighbors, so whatever. It is what it is. And then, I had no intentions of hunting, and I had bought a release that Joe had posted a picture of, because that was my only archery information was Joe. And he posted a picture of a silverback release, which I didn't know who Dudley was at the time. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, I'm going to get one of those. And I got one. And in between really starting to shoot with it and meeting Dudley for the first time, there was SHOT Show in Vegas. Mm-hmm. And Joe was out there. He was actually with Cam, and they ended up doing a podcast. I think it was the first podcast that Cam did. And I think he has since stopped doing it. What is the Keep Hammering podcast?
Okay.
But the night before that, we all went to dinner and Joe and I went pretty deep, as can happen. And that night he introduced me to Dudley. Neither Dudley or I really remembered it. So we had to meet again, but I was having, my D loop, which is where you hook the release as you pull back. So you have the hand where you're holding that you're holding your bow with, and then you have a release of some kind. Some people have a wrist strap. Some people have the handheld ones. Dudleys are handheld. And eventually it lets go of that so the string can move forward and it can launch the arrow. That D-loop was getting a little bit frayed. And I texted Joe. I'm like, hey, man, have you ever had this issue? He's like, well, don't ask me. Here's Dudley's number. And that, so that's how I met Dudley.
Okay.
And then I was at the CrossFit Games in Madison in 2019, 18, 17. In 2017, Dudley lives near Des Moines.
Oh, okay.
So I drove from Madison to Des Moines. We reintroduced ourselves to each other, hung with him for a day and a half. He totally dialed in my bow. And a week later was like, hey, what do you think about this hunting trip? I was like, I'm in. Don't ask me questions like that. I'm in. And then from there it had built. But my sponsors have all been cool because instead of just having to jump, it's go do things outdoors.
Right.
And highlight the usage of the product in those outdoor activities, which is
using the product as it should be.
Correct. And it gets me out of just having to jump, right? It's another, like I'm saying, you know, try to find a way to expand your horizon a little bit because we moved to Montana, which is beautiful. And yes, there are places I can base jump here. A lot of them would be in the national park. And I don't want to deal with the legalities of that. They're remote. They're backcountry. I don't have access to the community of people that I really used to jump with locally. So it'd be solo type stuff, which I'm not a fan of doing that stuff. At least if something goes wrong, catastrophic, somebody has a wreck, like, hey, this is what happened. And also we need to go, as opposed to, has anybody heard from Andy in like 10 days?
Yeah, right.
You know, they're like, does anybody know where he was?
Is he out hunting or?
Yeah, and then a bear eats me in, you know, in the park and nobody ever finds you. So I'm not a huge fan of going out and doing them by myself. I'd rather aggregate that risk and knowledge across multiple people and, you know, that combined knowledge base of their experiences. It'll help keep you alive in a lot of situations. So I was thinking, what else could I do? Like, the hunting was just a natural fit. I'm
pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Is that the bowl you got with?
So the bowl, which nobody can see, but I actually posted a picture above the fireplace, is the one from here in Montana in 2018. I killed that thing on 9/11 last year. So obviously his name's Bin Laden. I mean, and then down the hallway are some, those are all whitetails. Those are from a buddy's ranch in Texas. And they're just whitetail Jedis, just fanatics. They're doing a research project associated with it, but it's just cool. It's, and I just like the Euros. I mean, those were not like, that was a private land hunt. It's a very different experience than the hunt, but
yeah,
it's diversifying what I do. The podcast was another thing as well. I mean, like today we're doing a podcast at my house, but I was just in Niagara Falls doing a jiu-jitsu camp and took that podcast case that's right by your guys' feet over there. And I just travel with it, and it doesn't add anything except for a check bag, but it's another way to diversify. So
another avenue to go for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, I know what I don't want to do. Mm-hmm. I know I enjoy doing this stuff and having conversations. I know I enjoy teaching, which is the public speaking, and I enjoy finding things outdoors that challenge me, which definitely skydiving and base jumping is that, but then so is hunting too. So it all fits nicely. And all the sponsorships that I have, my litmus test is if it doesn't naturally integrate into my life, meaning well, I turn stuff down all the time. I'm trying to think of a good example. But a product that would be like, hey, you know, we want to have you involved with the brand. We'll pay you this amount. And I look at it and I go, well, I don't do that. Mm-hmm. So I would have to start adding or carving away more time to try to figure out a way to do that. And it would be totally fake. So how about I'm just going to take a hard pass.
Right.
I'm going to take a hard pass on that because I have taken deals just for money. They sucked. I've taken deals with brands that I had really not a lot of knowledge about. And this was early on. And I think a lot of people struggle through this if you're in the endorsement world, because the biggest hurdle is getting your first one, which is probably going to be product only, but you can say I'm a sponsored athlete,
right?
Which is going to get your second, you know, you can kind of start building your Rolodex and resume off of that. And I did the same thing. I was like, God damn it. I just look back. I'm like, I'm an idiot in stuff that I would probably not use or, and just, and now I'm like, you know what? No way. It either naturally integrates into my life or I'm not going to have a part of it.
Right.
So that was a really long way of saying I don't have a goddamn thing figured out, Andrew. I'm just kind of just, I wake up and I see what's next and I try to hit that and then, you know, move on from there.
Right.
But I'm enjoying what I'm doing for sure. In the move from San Diego, you were asking me before, you know, do you have any regrets? And it's like, yeah, I regret that we didn't move earlier.
Right.
And this property is pretty bitching.
Yeah.
For sure.
It's unique. This property actually is probably the reason why we landed in Kalispell. The year before this, we had come up and spent time at a VRBO at a different lake, and the kids just had a really good time out in the snow. I mean, they were, my oldest son was born in Virginia Beach. My middle son was born in Virginia Beach. My daughter was born in San Diego. It snowed a little bit, maybe a little bit in Virginia Beach. I doubt any of my kids ever remember being in that, brought them up here for Christmas in 2016. And then, no, in 2015, we brought them up here for Christmas. 2016, we found this property that we're sitting on right now, bought it, and purely as an investment, as a VRBO. 2017, moved up full-time, and this is where I live now, right. Full-time. So it's, but amazing. This property, we came up that December of 2016. I remember I drove because we had a lot of stuff. It was going to be Christmas time, so I wanted to have a lot of the gifts, like basically come with them instead of have to buy them up here. And I got my boys out of school the second it ended, and basically we got on the road. I drove from San Diego to Idaho Falls straight, which they did not appreciate because that was a very long drive.
Yep.
And then got here the next day, maybe 2 p.m. It was totally snowed out. Like, all the trees were holding all the white.
An actual whiteout, maybe?
No, it wasn't a whiteout at all. It was actually a sunny day.
Oh, nice.
But it had nuked snow in the weeks before. Yeah. It was like a banner year for snow.
Right.
And they were sledding down the hill the whole time. And actually, my sister came with her husband and their kids. My dad came with his wife. And it was awesome. We stayed up here for almost all of December 2016, explored Blacktail a little bit, explored Big Mountain a little bit, and got back in 2017. It's like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
Like, let's get out of here.
Right.
And put the house on the market like 2 months later.
Right. Probably sold it quick.
Not as quick as I would have thought.
No.
How is the market down there?
Still similar to where it was when you left. I mean, it's up and down. It's got like anything else, but.
The difference in pricing and value is unbelievable.
Yeah, it's crazy.
This house came fully furnished on 20 acres for a fraction of the cost of what we paid for our house in Chula Vista.
Right.
Cost of living in San Diego is insane.
It's insane. I actually don't know how people do it. I mean, I was born and raised in Santa Cruz. My dad was talking about, his house could sell for nearly $1 million. And it's, I guess it would be a 3-bedroom, 2-bath. And one of them is his office. Not huge. I think it's probably 1,500 square feet. $1 million. That's a college town.
Yeah.
So nuts.
Who's going to pay $1 million mortgage while you're in the middle of college? Like, I don't know how that's going to even be remotely possible.
Right. It's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's even looking at gas down here versus California right now. I think it's like $4.40 in San Diego.
Like for regular?
Yeah. I mean, I fill up at the same place.
$4.40?
Yeah. I'm paying high threes right now, and that's the cheapest place to get it. And it's crazy. And we're out of summertime, right? The summertime is when they crank up the prices in Southern California.
You guys are burning because apparently PG&E is just turning the power off.
It's pretty crazy right now.
Well, they were getting sued for power lines coming down, right? So they didn't want that liability. So they said, screw it. We're just going to turn the power lines off.
Yeah, it's a hot story.
For a couple of days, I think, too.
I feel like there would be other liability there by removing people's power from them.
You'd think, right?
Or I bet you there's something on the contract that you sign with them. I guarantee you there's some fine print that somehow probably alleviates that liability from them. That's got to be the only way that they can get away with that.
Right.
Huh.
That's something else, man. But again, you look outside right now, and it's like, can you see from here when you're looking out? Can you see is there a lake that's right there?
You can just now, depending on you can just see over the top of the trees.
Oh, yeah.
That you can see the beginning of the lake. So I think this is actually passing. Tomorrow is supposed to be a sunny day, which should work really well for the picks and stuff. And
I was like, how do you have a bad day when that's what you wake up to? So
it's possible. You kind of got to be a dick, though.
Okay.
You got to look for the glass half empty versus the glass half full.
Gotcha.
Yeah, but I would say it's relatively difficult to have a bad day out here.
No.
So what's next for Gators? You guys did the relationship with CrossFit, which was an interesting one. I'm assuming the feedback you got from the athletes was good.
Yeah, it was really good. It's funny. Again, that ecosystem with those athletes is very, very, I find it very interesting because it's not the NFL, it's not the NBA, but some of these athletes are treating it like it is, and they've got equity, they've got their image that they've got to preserve and make money with, but a lot of them agent up, and when we try to work with them, you get this...
I was gonna say, how's that experience?
You get this contract that's like 12 pages long, and they want this, and you're like, guys, this is, love you, you guys are phenomenal athletes, you fit our metric, but you're not the next LeBron James, they're asking for buku bucks, so unfortunately, we've kind of scaled back our activations there. We're working closely with specific athletes or specific guys that fit our mold. Josh was the best one that we ever had just because he was, he was a customer of ours when he was in the Navy.
Yep.
Retired, became, was continually doing the games even while he was still active duty. And it was just this natural fit. Probably the best athlete And I want to say probably the best athlete we've ever had as far as like an actual, like, you know, his story, you know, and then yeah. you know, of course you and some of the other guys that we work with, but he was a really good one for us as well. And then, you know, obviously he had conflicting sponsors, so he had to drop us, which is unfortunate, but totally.
It is what it is. Yeah,
exactly. So, as far as, you know, our outlook, like I was saying to you earlier, you know, one of our biggest, components of the manufacturing side is the quality aspect. The other side is the R&D. So we've got four engineers that full time. That's all they do is look at ways to refine the product to make it better, as well as try and fit, you know, what's hot in the market right now, what's trending. Even though our ethos, or I shouldn't say our ethos, but kind of the you know, our brand image and our and what we build all of our products for is the fit, form, and function you know, aspect. So fit. Very fit there. It's very, very obvious. You want it to fit right. Form is more of the aesthetics, the shape. You know, what is it you're doing? Do you need high wrap? Do you need low wrap? You know, what is it? And then function is it functional for what you're doing? And we try to make every product that we release fit the three Fs, the fit, form, and function. So our R&D team is always looking at trends, looking at different things that we can do to improve the products. We're actually going to be pre-releasing a new frame. We're trying to get out before Christmas this year, so we're producing very, very minimal of it. We've I think you got a pair.
What's it called?
It's called the Delta.
Why'd you get that name? It's just a phonetic letter D. So creative, Andrew.
Something different, man. So it's funny. You look at the names of the products we had, and you know, the Magnums are number one. Then you got the Raptor, which is its own name in itself, the way we spell it. And then, you know, we had Radiator, you've had Octane, you've had all these different things. Like, yeah, let's do something different. It's something different for us. So
yeah.
The name Delta just kind of clicks on right there. But that it's definitely something different for us. We've done very, very small seating with some people, some athletes, some of our ambassadors, all of them come back with the same feedback. It's definitely more of a, what we'd consider a unisex frame. So men look good wearing it and women look good wearing it too. That seems to be a metric with eyewear. You know, you have your super gaudy, feminine based products. We're definitely not, that's
movie star glasses.
There you go. Exactly. Right.
Yeah.
And then you got ones that look sleek, but yet can be sexy for both men and women to wear. So this is where the Delta kind of fits in, and it's just, like I said, nothing we've ever released before. So
it's also more lifestyle based, I feel like, which is not what our other products really are.
Right.
They're more the three Fs, like you had mentioned.
Right. And so again, you can still have that lifestyle look and feel, but it's still adjustable. You can still do things with it, and you know.
I would like you guys to make me a Gators monocle. Like the Mr. Peanut dude.
We can.
Be sweet.
I mean, think about it. It'd be pretty amazing, right?
Yeah,
simple design, circle.
Yeah.
Stamp that bitch out.
Yeah, that's it, man. we got a factory that could probably do that, right? So,
I mean, I'm just saying, who's making monocles anymore?
Oh, nobody, right? Got to get to it.
I'm just saying, it could be the next market for you.
You know, that's where it starts.
Yeah. Or like a set of Morpheus ones that just go right on the tip.
Oh, just
super tiny ones. Yeah.
Yeah. No temples needed. Just the nose clip. That's it.
What athletic markets are you guys looking at? Because like you said, you did the exercise world, you did the action sports, you kind of got the military. Are you just trying to grow inside of those things at this point?
Yeah. You know, it's funny when you talk about business, you talk about brands and markets that cater to you. We are definitely a niche oriented brand. We make a niche oriented product. And that's basically where we've thrived for the past, you know, 25 years is within those, you know, the special operations community. The military has been really good for us. And then there's just these select, like the skydive market. It's a very small market, but you can't meet a skydiver out there that doesn't wear a product just because they all swear by it. Trying to find that next market is always a challenge. CrossFit was really, really good when we did the activation there, just because it was still, I mean, it'd been around 6 or 7 years, but it was still in that growth stage. And I mean, it still seems like it's growing, even though
I think it is too, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the ecosystem's definitely evolved there, but I mean, you look at viewership, doesn't seem to be down. They've changed, like right now, the Open's going on right now, which is super early, you know, compared to previous years. But it seems that the attention's still there. All the gyms are still doing it. All the, I forget what you call them, affiliates, right?
Yep.
All the affiliates are still doing their thing. And but the outlook for us, I mean, is trying to find that market or the next big market that we can, the next big niche that we can get ourselves, you know, associated with and grow within. So
I dig it. What's next for you, Jared?
Just grinding, trying to do as much as I can here with Gators, photos and videos, you know, not really a video guy, but getting into that. So
what are you talking about? You're saying you can't fly a drone because of the whiteout conditions that aren't whiteout.
Yeah. I mean, we'll get it going. I think tomorrow might be more ideal.
I think if the snow stays overnight and it's a bluebird sky, like it's supposed to be tomorrow.
Oh, we'll get some good.
We're going to have a good day.
Content for sure.
We'll have a good day for sure. So, yeah, I mean, that is what we're going to do tomorrow. So today we're knocking out the podcast. Tomorrow's going to be, as much as I hate to say this, a day in the life of Andy, which is super boring. Feel free to skip that video. But, yeah,
it'll be a good one.
Hopefully I can show you guys around Montana a little bit, show you, you know, you're asking, like, what do I do? Show you a little bit of what I do. Yeah. This is part of
jiu-jitsu.
Tomorrow we will definitely do some jiu-jitsu. You can watch people choke me to death. And then
how long have you been doing that?
Somewhere between 15 to 16 months.
Nice. Enjoying it?
Very much so. And it's funny because I started because a buddy of mine would not shut up about it.
Was that Rogan as well?
No, it wasn't Rogan. It was a local guy, and I don't want to use his name because he'll get all pissy, so we'll make up a name, but we'll call him Nelson. And you need jiu-jitsu. And every time we'd hang out, he's like, I'm just like, will you shut up? He's like, yeah, I'll shut up if you go to a class. I'm like, I'll go to a class. I swear to God, if you never say this word again. And I went to a class. I'm like, this is awesome. Nice. I mean, you can tell instantaneously, just if you don't know anything, you just got smashed. And it was just a class. So, like, it wasn't even roll. I didn't actually roll. How would I describe that? So, there's a class setting where you're learning a technique and focusing on that at a much lower intensity. And then rolling is where you slap hands with somebody and simulate murder until one of you says, hey, I've had enough. Right. Whether it's a choke or a submission hold, or sometimes people will just tap because from being uncomfortable, whether the body weight is on them, whatever it may be. And I was just going to a class, one of the first class. I'm like, okay, this is awesome. So I signed up, and then it's gone from there. It was about 3 or 4 months of just learning the fundamentals and then the way SBG is structured. Got into the rolling, and then once I started rolling, it was awesome because you're pressure testing all the tech. Well, you take all the theoretical, like when somebody does this, you do this, but then you think about it in the class setting, you're both learning the same material, and you're very wittingly or willingly allowing the other person. It's like a
total chess match.
Not in the class. In the class, you're trying to work on the technique, they're trying to work on the technique, right. And you're both learning the same one. So you're really a passive partner. But then it comes rolling, and you both know the same technique, and you're both trying to execute it, but also stop the other person. It's much different.
Yeah.
So it's been really cool. I've been able to go to two of their yearly camps. I went to last year's fall spring camp. No, wait, how did it work? I went to this year's spring camp and this year's fall camp. I'm going to hit the next two because they're very close to where we are right now for next year. And then, yeah, I don't have any intention to stop. I mean, it's 2 hours out of your day. It's a perfect time for me in the middle of the day. Mm-hmm. I can go. I still do the class for an hour, and then afterward, now having worked my way through their system, I can roll for an hour after class, and it's perfect. And you're nice. Just
solid workout.
For it sure. is, yeah, yeah. You're losing water weight every day for sure, and skin, and you know it's good. Some blood sometimes. It's supposed to be called the gentle art, but I've been bloodied many a time, and I unfortunately have also kneed plenty of people in the face that I didn't mean to. It was unintentional.
Oh, yeah.
But it's been cool.
All fun games.
Yeah, it's been really cool. I mean, again, I'm at the very beginning of the learning stages of it, so.
Right.
So I'll let you guys close it out. What do you want to close it out with? I mean, the hour goes by so fast.
It's crazy. It's just sitting here having a conversation about, you know, things, and there it goes. But, I mean, you know, obviously we enjoy working with you a lot. I think you're actually technically, since we took over, you've been our longest standing ambassador, and it was ever since that CrossFit deal happened. And rely on you still for a lot of the insights to, you know, why do you wear the product? And hey, what's the next best thing? What do you think this? And I remember we have actually used you as kind of a guinea pig, if you will. We were working on this infrared lens that was specifically meant for high altitude conditions, because people don't realize that you get past, you know, certain, I think 15,000 is where, but the UV rays become that much more intense, where your standard sunglass lens.
Oh yeah. Just going to start roasting your eye.
It's just terrible. So that UV lens was really, I mean, it's not the most, it's definitely a technical lens, but you know, I think it was right after you'd done your world record.
The wingsuit jump.
The wingsuit jump. I was like, oh, let's totally see if we can have him do that. I'm like, I don't know if he's going to be able to wear the sunglasses at that. Because you were jumping at what, 40,000?
36.5.
So you had,
you're not wearing sunglasses for that.
You had a helmet, oxygen, all that stuff, right? So, but still, you know, using you as, again, someone who's going to help us develop the things that, you know, haven't really hit yet, or what we can do to make an already superior product that much better. You know, that you get to that point where that's what our outlook is, and that's the things that we strive to do every day. And again, the there's a lot to talk about when it comes to the brand, but the American made side is really a huge part of it for us.
It is for me too. It's, I think, one of the main reasons that I've always kind of been endeared to the brand.
Right.
They just stay true to that. And yeah, like I said, I mean, for over a decade, well over a decade, I was buying them, and yeah, they're expensive, but right. you get what you pay for.
Right. And I mean, you know, we're working on a couple, actually, Jared's been working on a couple of our manufacturing videos that we'll post on our YouTube channel or website, just so people can see, they hear this, you know, manufactured in the U.S. thing. Well, what is, you know, do you know what a sunglass, what it looks like to make a pair of these sunglasses? You know, your traditional plastic injection molding, it's almost like a clean room environment. You know, you got guys in, you know, whites and, yeah. and so on and so forth. Ours is, I mean, It's dumbing it down to say it's kind of like a machine shop. It's a state-of-the-art facility with multiple CNC machines, ovens, bending dies, MEI machines, which are lens cutting machines. We have all the state-of-the-art equipment. It's about a 10,000 square foot facility in Yuma. But just seeing how we take a piece of sheet aluminum that's literally the size of this table here,
yeah.
you know, cutting it, milling it, bending it, forming it, all that stuff through the process of typically about 30 days to see, you know, a sunglass that's made out of this flat sheet of aluminum. And the quality that comes behind that is just, we use that, our phrase is there is no substitute. And that truly does, you know, speak all about what the brand's about.
That's the perfect ending.
Yeah.
That's all I have for this week. Every week I try to say thank you. So I'm just going to do what I do every week. Thank you for everybody who is supporting the podcast and helping me spread the word. It is greatly appreciated. I had no idea what the podcast was going to be like when I first started. Just got into triple digits, and it is surprisingly cathartic for me to create. I really enjoy doing it. I love sitting down with interesting people. I love hearing amazing stories. I love sitting down with my friends and laughing my ass off. And a lot of that is made possible because people are supportive of the podcast. That's where the sponsorships came from. People are buying the t-shirts. They're telling other people about it. And I can't say thank you enough. So to all those people doing all those things, thank you. And I will hear you, see you. I'm not going to do either of those things. I'm not going to hear or see you next week. But if you want to, you can hear from me. So until then, have a good one.